Support for this IPR podcast comes from Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to causes they care about. Details on the Endow Iowa Tax Credit Program at communityfoundations.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later in the show, we will remember disability advocate Tyler Green of Waterloo. He passed away in early November after being struck by a car. But first, here we are in the midst of the holiday season. It's a time that can bring a lot of joy, fun, great food, togetherness, but it's also a time of high expectations. It can be incredibly stressful, especially for those who are involved in making the magic happen. And togetherness can bring its own share of challenges. Becky Schmoke believes that bringing mindfulness to our holiday preparations and celebrations can help us cope and connect with each other in more meaningful ways. To be fair, she believes that mindfulness is a good idea throughout the year. She is the founder of Becky's Mindful Kitchen near Iowa City. She teaches cooking classes, leads mindfulness and leadership workshops, runs camps for kids, and has created a beautiful and magical rural retreat. And she is with me now. Hello, Becky.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I want to start with your journey toward mindfulness. Can you tell me when the idea of really embracing this philosophy started with you?
Oh, that's a good question. So ironically, mindfulness became a part of my life when I finally realized that it's okay to not be someone who meditates or does yoga, because like I don't do that. And I kept struggling, like I want to be mindful, I want to do this, and it never worked. And so I finally realized that for me and for so many other people, mindfulness can look like a whole lot of other things. And so once I was able to come to peace with the fact that I can't do yoga and I cannot meditate, but I can be mindful, just a new world opened up and I started writing about it to share with others.
So tell me what mindfulness means to you.
Mindfulness for me is, you know, just that simple awareness. It's taking that space between, you know, instead of reacting, you're responding. So mindfulness is just recognizing in this moment what's actually happening. A lot of times we have our own stories about what's happening and we don't realize what's actually in front of us. And so slowing down, seeing it, and then using that time, that space for your benefit and not your detriment.
All right. And give me an example of how you can be mindful in a situation and how that can change the situation.
Okay. So like one of my holiday tips, which comes across not as very mindful or probably very kind initially, is that I tell people, like, you are not that special. I'm like, you are really not this special. The world does not revolve around you and no one is conspiring against you. And taking that with you into the public. So when you're shopping at a store and the person who's the cashier and, you know, they're rude to you, and your initial response is to be like, oh, my God, what the heck? Like, why are you being so rude to me? And to make it about you, if you're able to be mindful enough to take a pause and think to yourself, I have no idea who this person is, what their story is, what just happened in their life, and to just give compassion to that person. And then also give yourself that same grace for when you make a mistake and you get home and you realize, oh my God, I forgot what I went to the store for. You know, like, that's okay. We make mistakes. So mindfulness applied is simply giving yourself grace, giving others grace, and recognizing that there's usually more to the story.
All right. Well, and it also sounds like, I guess I've heard the same approach described as assume positive intent. So you're not necessarily saying to assume positive intent, but to not write a negative story about what is going on. Don't invent something that makes the situation worse.
Yeah, or don't even assume intent at all. Like, so often we forget, like, things just happen. Like, it just, like, accidents happen. Things, you know, like, it's, you know, somebody backs up and they didn't see you and, like, you know, like, hopefully it doesn't hate you. But, you know, you're like, oh, how could they not see me? And it's not even like, oh, they were just busy doing something else. It's like, okay, maybe they made a mistake. Like, there's not always even an intent.
As you started to embrace mindfulness and leave your expectations for what that might look like behind, tell me how you really built your approach to mindfulness. What sources did you look for? What mentors did you look to?
One thing that makes me a little unique not just especially as a female, is for me, Stoic philosophy is my foundation. So looking back at Stoicism, reading what the, you know, these people, these ancient Stoics were writing 2,000 years ago, and then recognizing that a lot of stuff we talk about now, they were writing about and talking about so long ago, and then just kind of going back to that foundation and building off on that. So it's really that idea.
So give me Stoic philosophy in a nutshell, because, you know, when we say somebody is Stoic, that is completely different from what Stoic philosophy is.
So tell me a little bit. Stoic with a little S, you know, versus Stoic with a big S. So because the people, when they're like, oh, my gosh, you are not you're not Stoic, because I'm very much like emotional and expressive. Stoic philosophy, what's so important about it is to recognize they really focus on is that dichotomy of control, kind of what's in your control and what is not. And what they always talk about, living in accordance with nature. And it's not going out and hugging a tree. It's living in accordance with, like, what are we meant to be? Like, how do we live that good life? And they are not against emotions. It's simply, like, how do we cultivate and live in those positive emotions? And a lot of it is recognizing that if something's outside of your control, spending time, like, moaning and complaining about it does you zero good. So going into this holiday season, your flight gets canceled because of bad weather. Like, unless if you are able to control the weather, and if you can, like, please call and let us know. Or, you know, you can fly a plane, or you can go back in time and schedule a new flight and do all these things. You can't control the fact that your flight got canceled, but you certainly can control how you respond to that. And so often, and a big part of Stoicism is, like, looking at an obstacle as an opportunity. So your flight got canceled. If you choose to not waste the time complaining about it, you might see a benefit to that. And that's awesome. It doesn't mean you don't have to be upset, but just don't spend time there.
It's also about embracing the reality that's around you, right?
Yeah. So a Stoic phrase, and it's a Latin phrase, so you can, like, feel extra smart when you say it too, is amor fati. Okay, which, of course, my kids always like to say, like, amor fati. So whichever one floats your boat, but amor fati is the idea of, like, embrace your fate. And not just, like, accept it, but embrace it. So, like, your boss yells at you. Like, that's awesome. It's an opportunity for you to learn how to, like, how you would be a better boss, right? Or learn how to do things differently. You know, like, embrace everything that happens to you. Because you can't change it. You can change some things, but we can change a lot less than we feel.
Tell me a little bit about your vision as you were creating Becky's Mindful Kitchen. Because when I think about mindfulness, I will admit, and a lot of people will find this to be surprising, because in another life, I also stand next to people who cook really well. And cooking is not my forte, and I find it to be extremely stressful. There's a lot to accomplish, and there are lots of balls in the air, and I have other things to do. So when I'm in the kitchen, I can get pretty stressed out pretty easily. So when I think about mindfulness and kitchens, those don't necessarily go together for me. But give me a little bit of your vision as you were starting to build Becky's Mindful Kitchen.
So that's so fascinating, because I never would have known. Okay, we'll talk about that another time. Here's the thing. In the kitchen, you learned lessons that have nothing to do with cooking. And for me, I'm not a trained chef. I never want to go to culinary school. And actually, like, there are so many better bakers and chefs just, like, probably in this building than I am. That wasn't why I started BMK, Becky's Mindful Kitchen. It's because I love to teach. And I saw cooking as a way to teach mindfulness. And how I do that, it's, you know, when I have kids in my kitchen and they are following the recipe and they make a mistake, I don't let them start over again. All right. And it's not just because I'm really cheap and I don't want to waste, like, ingredients. I mean, sometimes that does play a role, but I'm like, no. Okay, this is what we got now. How do we solve this? How do we make this mistake work for us? All right. What can we create now? Like, okay, we're no longer making this recipe. We're making a new one that you're creating. And it's also teaching people the fact when then, like, my recipes are very basic. I don't give you a lot of information because I want you to make it work for you. Because what I love to eat, you may not. And to recognize that it is not a right or wrong. And so I always laugh when people's like, oh my gosh, I'm like, they feel so bad. They're like, I don't really like this if they eat something I made. I'm like, okay, that's cool. Like, I do. And like, that's why like we're different and that's all right. Like it's all right to not like spicy foods. And so to recognize that, bringing that into your life, know what you like and what you don't. If you don't like hot peppers, don't order a spicy salsa. Like, just why would you set yourself up for that? Order what you like, know yourself, and be mindful as you go through it.
You teach a lot of online cooking classes and sometimes have huge audiences online. And was that something that you were doing before the pandemic, or did that grow out of the pandemic?
Oh, yeah. If we want to talk about obstacles as opportunities, definitely never before the pandemic. I have what I call like squirrel powered internet because I'm out in the country. It was old school. Everyone had to turn off their Wi-Fi for me to hold a class. And we have slightly better internet now, but we still struggle at times. So it was something I never would have considered doing. But I had to close down during COVID. I have a daughter who's high risk. I'm high risk myself. And so I started this thing and I did over 200 free classes in 2020. And then I started them up again too. And it's just been a way for everyone to come together and connect. Doesn't matter what you believe in, who you pray to, you know, whether you are gluten-free or not, because all my classes can be either gluten-free or not. It's where we spend an hour together and we laugh. And I make so many mistakes. And it's like, and it's fun because people realize like, okay, look at, she just screwed up her own recipe. That means I can do this too.
We are going to take a short break and then we'll be back and we will talk more about some of your great advice for surviving and thriving, hopefully, in the holiday season in a moment. Becky Smoke is here with me. She is the founder of Becky's Mindful Kitchen, which is outside of Solon near Iowa City. She teaches cooking classes, leads mindfulness and leadership workshops, runs camps for kids. She's building a stone playground for her goats right now and has created a beautiful and magical rural retreat. We will talk more about her approach to mindfulness and get some tips that we can all use in just a moment. Then later in the hour, we will remember disability advocate Tyler Green of Waterloo. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR comes from Corridor Vein Center and Corridor Aesthetics, treatment for varicose veins and spider veins, also providing facial rejuvenation services and treatment for moderate to severe acne. More at Corridor Vein and CorridorAesthetics.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We are in the midst of the holiday season. That's a time of joy and fun and magic for a lot of people. It's also a time of a lot of stress for a lot of us, especially those of us who are involved in making the magic happen. Togetherness can be wonderful. It can also be challenging. And so we have invited Becky Smoke here today to give us some advice on bringing mindfulness to our holiday preparations and celebrations in a way that can help us cope and connect with each other in more meaningful ways. She is the founder of Becky's Mindful Kitchen near Iowa City. And I want to talk, before we get into some of your advice, about connecting through food, because that's something that we do in the holiday season all the time. We come together for these meals, for these special desserts, and all of these things. It's a very important part of what we do as we celebrate, as we connect. But you feel like our connection with food and through food is much bigger than that. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts about that.
Yeah. So one thing I talk about is like the kitchen is a place to gather. and it has been. Like, if the walls of your kitchen could talk, I mean, it's witnessed a lot. That's where we go when we're angry and we're sad. That's where we reach for the ice cream and we cut the birthday cake, right? And so when we come together the holidays, the food plays a big role. And I have a unique perspective, and I talk about this on my social media pages, is that for 20 years, I dealt with a pretty nasty eating disorder from anorexia to bulimia. And so the food aspect of the holidays was always very tricky for me to navigate. And so as I like to remind people that while we do love bringing our food together, it's so easy to sometimes allow the food to become more than it needs to be. You know, that's when we can, we kind of sigh like, okay, yeah, like, that's right. Aunt Debbie no longer eats gluten. Okay, fine. We can't do the dairy now. Like, it's so complicated. And then like we see somebody not eating and we just like put our judgments and like we can in our head make the food lose what it really used to be, which is like we're nourishing ourselves. And it is okay to nourish yourself with whatever you want to, as long as it's not harming someone else. You know, people always be like, oh, no, I'm sorry, it's not organic. When they like bring me something, I'm like, I don't care. You know, like around the holidays, use that kitchen, use the eating, use the food as a time to gather and not worry about what the person next to you is eating.
Communication is one of your keys for having a happy and mindful holiday season and the rest of the year as well. Tell me a little bit about one of your tools for communication.
Yeah. So this brings the kitchen and cooking into it too, which is always fun. Stay on brand. the idea of a lot of times fights that happen over the holiday season, or honestly anytime, is due to the fact that we misinterpret someone else's reaction to something, or we just simply don't communicate. So in our household, we use the two terms boil and simmer. So we will tell if you are on edge with someone, if I'm just going home, I go home, I'm just feeling just extra kind of anxious, antsy, like I will let my family know. I'm like, okay, guys, I am at a simmer. And at a simmer means that, you know, you can either turn that heat up and you're going to get to a boil, or you have the opportunity to turn it down and cool off pretty quickly. And so a simmer is where we like to try to, in our house, like not go beyond and to identify that. But it also means that we have a word, that one single word, it communicates everything to everyone. I don't have to explain anything. I just say I'm at a simmer. The other word is a boil.
Because when you're simmering, explaining can sometimes
send you to a boil, right, okay. Very much so. So a simmer be like you get home and the trash cans are left out by the side of the road, and you assume they did that because your family's out to get you and they want you to do all the work and they are lazy. You don't think that way when you're not at simmer. A boil is you are like you're done. You know the next words out of your mouth are going to be ones that you're going to have to do repairs for. And so when we are at a boil, You can turn that heat off, right? But it's still going to take a while to come down. So turning the heat off for us is, you know, going and resetting, is going for a walk. You know, it's removing yourself from the situation that's gotten you to the boil. But then there's also the idea to cool off pot of water is throw ice in it. And so we all have a way of throwing ice. For me, it's going and working out or hauling a bunch of rocks or being with the goats. For my kids, it's laughter. So like I'll challenge them. It's like, let's all spin around as fast as we can until we fall down, right? It's throwing ice into that to cool off. Why is this important over the holidays? You might have people in your home who might be getting you to simmer or to boil. And if you can communicate with your spouse, your partner, your children, hey, I'm at a simmer, then you don't have to say anything else. And they know where you're at and they can have your back. And they also know that, hey, if mom responds with a bit more edge to her voice, that's why. Or if mom says, go clean your room, and she says she's at a simmer, you better go clean your room because mom's not going to respond too well to saying no.
Well, and it also implies that you are aware of your feelings, which is part of your mindfulness approach,
right?
Understanding why you're feeling the way that you're feeling and noting
right
where you are. That's pretty important. And that can be really challenging for a lot of people.
No, and it's once you start noticing, and sometimes putting simply that image of a pot of water simmering, Like, I think we've all felt that. We're just like, oh, you can feel it's building. It's getting hotter and hotter. And if you're always at a simmer, it doesn't take much to put you over the top. And so I mentioned this to my now six-year-old who's been doing this since she was three. And I said, you know, how do you describe this? She's like, well, Mom, she's like, there's boil. And she goes, and then there's absolute boil and I'm overflowing. And she's like, you know, and she was describing, she's like, you know, when you like forget that you're cooking the pasta and the water goes everywhere, Mom. I'm like, yes, thank you. And she's like, or like when you did the, and she like gave me a whole lot of great, great memories of times I've overboiled things. And she's like, that's when it's gone too far. And she's like, at that point, she goes, I can't come back without help. And so recognizing our kids and ourselves that sometimes when we are overflowing, we need the help of others to cool down.
This relates to what you were talking to earlier, too, which is to understand that you are not the center of the universe and that people aren't out to get you. When so if you are already having a hard time, if you are simmering and you are out and about and the clerk is rude to you and somebody cuts you off in traffic, I mean, that's another moment where you need to take stock of where you are and how you're responding to the world, right?
Yeah, and we have a personal responsibility. So, you know, it's I always remind people that, yes, yeah, I get it. You had a horrible day. You're at a simmer and you feel someone be like, it wasn't my fault. I'm like, it's still your responsibility to if you're at a simmer and you blow up at someone next to you, you got to make that right. And then you can own it. You can say, you know, this is why. If you say I was at a simmer, they might look at you weird, but you can then explain better, like, this is why I did that. And to that point, while you need to realize the world doesn't revolve around you, you also need to remember how impactful your actions can have on the person next to you. And the illusion I like to make is if you think back on moments of kindness from strangers, there's a very good chance that stranger doesn't remember that moment, but you do. And so you have the opportunity to be in perhaps like a lifelong memory of someone else. So even if you're not going to be kind and gracious as, you know, in a selfless way, do it selfishly and recognize you could be in a memory of someone. And like, how cool is that? So like, if you're that person who needs that motivation, take it and run with it. But never, ever give up an opportunity for kindness because you don't know where that person's at in their day. And just, I guess, I just look at people and I'm like, why wouldn't you be kind? It's easy. It's really easy.
I think that some of us, especially those of us who are the caretakers or like I keep saying, the person who's responsible for making the magic, usually there's a person in a family. I'm that person in my family who, you know, does all the planning and all the prep and the gift giving and, you know, all of those things. And that can be enormously stressful. It also feels, you know, really wonderful when you can make it happen. But I feel like some of us in that role, we forget that our feelings matter at all, or we try to squash them down so that we can get through what we're doing. And again, it feels like you're giving us tools to deal with our emotions and to recognize that our emotions are valid.
I just want to clarify, are you saying that the feelings of a mother matter? Because like this, hold on, this is awesome to learn. No, it's, and to that point though, it's that recognizing as a caretaker all that, like, you're making a choice. And I get there's gonna be people listening and be like, oh no, like if I don't do it, no one does it. Okay, but if you're doing it causes you to get really stressed out and you're not enjoying it, then is that really worth it? And it's not. And to just like challenge these preconceptions we have of what the holidays need to look like. You know, what traditions really need to be brought on. Certain things that they may not fit in your reality anymore, and that is okay. You might have in your head, like, this year we're going to do this. You know, we're going to go cut down the tree. And you get there, and the line of cars is, like, way down the road. And you're like, okay, you know what? Not this year. And that's okay. And so just, I think, for me, it's constantly reminding myself, I don't have to get stressed out. If I'm getting stressed out over decorating a Christmas tree, I'm really not living my own values. And ask for help. It is okay to ask for help. That's where the stoicism comes in. Marcus Aurelius, a Roman emperor, writes about in his personal journal, like, it is okay to ask for help. So I always tell people, if a Roman emperor was saying it's okay to ask for help, you can too, because you are not as awesome as a Roman emperor. And if a Roman emperor can ask for help, you can ask for help. Like, let's just, like, you know, reality check ourselves here a bit. So ask for help, say no, and don't do things that don't bring you joy. Life's too short.
I'm talking with Becky Smoke, the founder of Becky's Mindful Kitchen. And traditions are an interesting thing to think about with the holiday season, because a lot of us have traditions that go back generations or go back to our childhood. And we want to make that magic happen, carry on those traditions. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with traditions, what you've learned about them.
Some traditions, I feel like, are the equivalent of the parents yelling at their kids at Disneyland, like, you will have fun. Like, we will have fun with this. Like, okay, like, if a tradition has become a chore, it's not, it's like you're doing it a disservice. Like, and it is okay to alter tradition, and you can talk about traditions and decide, like, you know, especially if you're starting a family and you're a young new family and you have, you know, two partners who have traditions and you can't bring them all in. Like, it just doesn't work that way. It's not enough time. So really being mindful of looking at what fits and how can we alter it. Traditions are wonderful. I have some in my life, and I'm either probably only exist because my parents live locally and they can help make it possible. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't continue them. So thank you, Mom and Dad, for that one. But I think the best thing and the best piece of advice on traditions I can give is look at the meaning of that tradition. Like, what is the value that that brings to you? The actual actions themselves may not be what fits, but find a way to carry forth that feeling inside that you got from that tradition in a way that works for your family. We change. The world is not the same as it was even, gosh, a week ago, it feels like, a year ago. So, like, there's a lot of traditions that I'm glad we no longer have in this world. And again, if a tradition's a chore, drop it.
Let's talk about managing expectations, because that's another big thing in the holiday season. We may have very high expectations. Kids have very high expectations, sometimes impossible to reach expectations. How do you manage that?
All right. I'll hit you with more Latin. We can feel so smart at the end of this hour. So pre meditatio malorum is a Latin phrase and a Stoic term of basically you're preparing for the worst. And so you are, you know, preparing for you know, the evil in the sense of, which some might fit for some holiday chores, but is looking ahead. So when I have expectations, I have to think at what, first of all, is in my control. And then also think, what are all the things that could go wrong that would impact those expectations? So if I have expectations that the kids were going to sit around the Christmas tree and sing songs, sing carols, and drink hot cocoa, and everyone's going to be happy and it's going to be perfect after we watch White Christmas, then I need to think ahead also, like, hey, what the premeditation malorum, what could go wrong? Okay, first of all, like, a kid could get sick. A kid could be a kid and decide that they don't want to sing carols, right? I could have something come with my work. My husband's a firefighter. He could get called off to fire. So, like, plan ahead. Think of all the things that could go wrong. So that way, when they happen, you're not devastated by them. We're not devastated here in Iowa when it snows in winter. We may not like the snow, but we're not devastated because we know it's coming. It's when we're caught by surprise that we often feel devastated. So really set yourself up, remove the surprise, plan ahead for everything to go wrong. And so when that does happen, you're able to be like, huh, look it, that one happened. I know now what to do to adjust and move forward.
You are also sharing some advice that has recently become very popular again. Walt Whitman said it, then Ted Lasso said it. And now you say, be curious, not judgmental. So as we head into this holiday season, when we are encountering sometimes difficult people in our lives, people that we might have disagreements with, that's something you try to carry with you?
Yes, I know. And Ted Lasso, I love it. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. And it does work for age six because it has become a family show. Yes, curious, not judgmental. I love to teach debate and how to have respectful discourse. And the key to that is being curious. So I can sit across the table from someone who we would vote differently on every topic. We believe, I mean, you would not think that we have anything in common And yet I can stay curious and find out some fascinating pieces of information. So if you're at the holiday table and you're with your great uncle Ed, who just like makes you want to scream, ask him what his favorite toy was at the age of 10. Ask him about his favorite Christmas gift. Ask him questions that have nothing to do about those topics, guys. Just stay away from them, all right? Like, just don't. And just stay curious. And ask him, hey, what was the time you were most frightened? Tell me about the time that you felt the most loved. Stay curious about the human beings. We have forgotten that we are on the same team. We are sparring partners, which means, yeah, we might give each other black eyes once in a while, but we are doing it to better the other person. We are on the same team. And to go into the holidays with the idea that we are all human, we're trying to do this together, you'll get through a lot easier.
Well, Becky, thank you very much for being here today. And I'm feeling calmer and more prepared already. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Always. Thank you so much.
Becky Smoke is the founder of Becky's Mindful Kitchen outside of Iowa City. She teaches cooking classes and runs camps for kids, teaches leadership and mindfulness workshops as well. You can find out more at beckysmindfulkitchen.com. Coming up in just a moment, we will remember a man who made a tremendous difference in Iowa and really around the world. We will remember disability advocate Tyler Green of Waterloo. This is Talk of Iowa.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Early in November, Tyler Green of Waterloo passed away after being struck by a car. He was only 31 years old, but he packed a great deal of life and good work into his three decades. He touched many people through his work as a disability rights advocate, an advocate for inclusion. Tyler had cerebral palsy and used a wheelchair. When he was in high school, he created a video as part of his Eagle Scout project for Boy Scouts. In the video, we see a neurotypical boy. His name is Chase, but he's portraying Tyler. He says, "I'm Tyler," at the beginning of the video. And he talks about all of the activities he's engaged in, marching band and martial arts. He talks about his love for hip hop and show tunes and what it's like at school. The video then transitions to the real Tyler sitting in his wheelchair. And he says, "You shouldn't be surprised to find out that he has a normal high school experience despite his cerebral palsy, nonverbal learning disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, and anxieties, because they are all part of his life." Here is just an excerpt from this video.
"I want to talk to you about the people who made the effort to see me. Tyler, not a diagnosis. These are the people who saw me for my abilities, not my disabilities. My life would be totally different. What would I be doing? More importantly, what wouldn't I be doing? If you're watching this, you're probably in a position to make a difference too. You're in a position to practice ability awareness."
That is Tyler Green talking about what he called ability awareness. He passed away in early November after getting hit by a car. And Paul Green, Tyler's dad, is here with us now. Hello, Paul.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here, and I'm so sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
I would love for you to tell us just more about Tyler. I know that you were on a journey with him in his childhood, learning how to embrace who he was and live his life to the fullest. But tell us a little bit about the Tyler that you knew and loved.
Oh my, I will do my best. Tyler was a child who wanted to do everything, and we as a family wanted to support him in that endeavor. So he played soccer with the kids, with me or his mom holding him up by his armpits and running around with the kids. He played softball and Cub Scouts with me pushing him around the bases in his wheelchair. He learned karate and was fortunate to have a sensei, an instructor, who would work with him to find different ways of doing the katas, the moves, on his knees rather than on his feet, which was not possible. And Tyler was just simply full of life and wanted to live life and wanted to be just one of the kids, and which is exactly what he was. He was just one of the kids.
He once told you that if he had the ability to change his disability, he wouldn't. Tell me a little bit about his feelings about that.
Well, we were actually traveling home from doing a presentation, and I don't remember exactly what the context of the conversation was, but it led to Tyler making the comment that he was disappointed to find parents talking to him about wanting to fix their kids with disabilities. And he said, they're not broken. They don't need to be fixed. And he said, you know, Dad, if they had a pill that would cure cerebral palsy like a disease, which of course it isn't, he said, I wouldn't take that. I wouldn't be interested. I'm okay with who I am. I wouldn't change anything. And as a dad who, of course, wants nothing but the best for his children, like any parent, I was taken aback by that comment. And I didn't quite understand, and we had quite a discussion about it. And I explained to Tyler that parents just want what's best for their kids. And he wasn't buying it. He was adamant. I am who I am, and I'm fine with that. And it took me a while to understand. And when I did, I was actually a little embarrassed that it took me that long, because, of course, I too was fine with who Tyler was. All of it. And what he did and what he stood for and what his messages were. So I think it was something that he took to all of his speaking engagements, his keynote presentations, and also to his trainings, that all of us, not just folks with disabilities, but all of us need to be comfortable with who we are.
That's so powerful. And you're right. It's so profound and yet simple too, but that's hard for a lot of us to get to that point that Tyler was at in clearly understanding himself and his place in the world. I want to talk a little bit about this video that he made for his Eagle Scout project in Boy Scouts, because it's a very powerful few minutes where, again, you see an actor portraying Tyler, a neurotypical child, talking about all of the things that he does, all of the very normal things that a high school student does. And Tyler is doing all of those things. And the way that he created this video hits home really fast that, you know, this young man may not be neurotypical, but he is human and he is every inch a high school student in every way, not in spite of his disabilities, but because that is who he is. And this video traveled really far. Can you tell me a little bit about the impact he had just with that video?
Yes. So the video originally was designed to be sent to the school districts in Iowa to be used for educator and administrator training in the state of Iowa. And there was a website that Tyler and his cousin developed so people could provide feedback and order more DVDs if they wanted them. They were free with a donation and still are. And but before we even had the DVDs back from the company producing them in the Twin Cities, Tyler was getting requests on his website from all over the country for the DVD, which only a handful of people had even seen at that time. And the DVD has never been marketed. But within 6 months, Tyler had requests from all 50 states. And within a year, that had expanded to 18 countries. And now I believe it's at 29 countries. It's been interpreted into half a dozen different languages and just really took off. The message just simply hits home with people in its, I think, simplicity. What else would you expect from anyone? And why do we have different expectations of someone because they're in a wheelchair than someone else? It doesn't make sense when you stop and think about it. And I think the message has rung true over the years. And here, 15 years later, Charity, we're still getting requests for the DVD. Although now that it's available digitally online, people are using it more that way. But by the most conservative of estimates, well over 1 million people have viewed the DVD and have learned from it. And it opened a lot of other doors for Tyler as well.
I'm sure. And it's really an incredible legacy. He did a great deal, and I know that he had a great deal more to do, but he really profoundly touched so many people with that message. And you talk about watching him speak to an audience, and you could see them changing in front of your eyes.
Yes. One of the privileges as Tyler's father and chauffeur and AV person when he was doing keynote presentations was having the bird's eye view of watching the audience as they watched Tyler. And you could, Charity, visibly see on people's faces and through their body language how they changed during that 45 minutes to an hour, from looks of sympathy and pity for this you know, poor, tragic soul in a wheelchair up on the stage, which of course he wasn't. And Tyler would quickly through his witty personality and using humor and through stories and through sharing pictures of himself that were humorous as well, he quickly could win over the audience and they would see him rather than the wheelchair. And you could see you could just see in people's faces that they were getting it. They were realizing that this isn't a poor, tragic soul in a wheelchair. This is a credible source of good information, of good insights on life. And the light bulbs were just clicking on all over the room. People who may have started out the presentation reading their newspaper or on their cell phone, those were quickly put away, and people were leaning in for more and laughing with Tyler and enjoying and learning. And it was a privilege for me and one that I never tired of.
Paul, thank you so much for talking with me and for sharing your son with us.
Thank you for talking about Tyler. We will be working hard, and I know there are thousands and thousands of other people as well who will be keeping Tyler's message and legacy alive for generations to come.
Paul Green, Tyler Green's father, and Tyler Green passed away early in November. I want to also bring Sarah Corkery into this conversation. She's a board member of Inclusion Connection, a nonprofit that has worked hard to make sure that people can see the abilities of those who have what we call disabilities. She worked with Tyler. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you for being here. And we had such a wonderful remembrance from Paul, and we don't have a great deal of time left, but I know that Tyler's work continued on far, far beyond that video that so many people know about. I mean, tell me a little bit about the work that Tyler did with ability awareness and trying to make sure that other kids had the kinds of opportunities he did.
You bet. I do want to share that we have put a link to Tyler's full story obituary on our website, inclusionconnection.org. So if people want to go out and read about Tyler's legacy, it's very simple. There's a button to do that. Ability awareness is simply the skill of recognizing that someone can do something is much more important than what they can't do. I also have a child with a disability, and Inclusion Connection works every day to make sure that people are included in the real world, are able to work and live and learn and play, all in environments that are adapted for everybody. And that generally makes things better for everybody. And that was definitely Tyler's message. I think he'd also want me to share, he was part of a planning committee. We put on an annual event. So coming up in June, we are going to put on another event, and it might be virtual or in person, but those light bulbs go off in those moments when we get educators and people involved, and they do start to see that if you presume competence, you can really impact people's lives. And all it takes is that one person. So, Tyler's changed the world for hundreds of thousands, and every person has that opportunity as they engage just with all people, and especially people with disabilities.
Yeah. And you worked with Tyler. Tyler was also a friend. How will you remember him?
I will. I'm going to carry his message forward, as Paul has said, and be sure that we are sharing his voice and participating. And I'll greatly miss him. He had always the biggest smile on his face and always ready to take on the next challenge. And he volunteered, and he was active in his community and worked for Inclusion Connection as our Together We Play coordinator. So he'll be missed in all those areas, but we will keep his message alive, as Paul has said.
And I'm sure that as you look around your community in Cedar Falls, Waterloo, and Waverly, and just in the work that you do, you can probably see things that he touched everywhere that make other people's lives better.
Every day.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for talking with me and for sharing just a few memories of Tyler Green.
Yes, thank you for carrying his message forward.
Sarah Corkery is a board member with Inclusion Connection, where Tyler Green also worked. And you can find out more about that organization at inclusionconnection.org. We are remembering Tyler Green. He was 31 years old when he died at the beginning of November after being struck by a car. He spent so much of his life advocating for people with disabilities, for ability awareness. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Zachary Oren Smith, Rick Brewer, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can get in touch with us anytime. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And you never need to miss an episode of Talk of Iowa. Please subscribe to our podcast. Search for Talk of Iowa wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.